There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Ahead on NFL Live, it may not be pretty, but the NFC East still up for grabs. The Eagles keep pace with the Cowboys in an effort to win a division no one seems to want. We'll have the latest on the Patriots' admission that mistakes were made by an organizational film crew. Will the latest indiscretion have repercussions from the league? And from Lamar Jackson to Russell Wilson, which of the league's quarterbacks pull off magic the most often? Ryan Clark ranks our resident magician QBs and explains what makes their tricks of the trade so valuable. Hello, everybody, and happy to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. Wendy Nix here with Dan Graziano, Ryan Clark, Coach Jack Del Rio. The Jets and the Ravens will kick off Week 15. They play on Thursday night, and there's already news on a couple of star players. We start with this. Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson limited in Monday's practice with a quad injury. Jackson leads the league with 28 touchdown passes, 22 yards away from Michael Vick's single-season quarterback rushing record. He's yet to be sidelined since he took over as Baltimore's starting QB. The Ravens practice later today, and we'll have an update at that time. The New York Post reporting that Jets running back Le'Veon Bell was spotted bowling in New Jersey late Saturday night. This notable because it was after he was ruled out of Sunday's game against the Dolphins with the flu. Coach Adam Gase was asked today about it and said he won't discipline Bell because he did not violate a team rule, but he will speak to him. Bell is scheduled to speak to the media at 4 o'clock Eastern today. Coach, I will start with you. Are we making too much of this? Big deal? Not a big deal. There you go. You take it from here.
I mean, my goodness, are you kidding me? Are we really talking about – do we have to say if you're too sick to play, you should be at home? I don't think that's asking too much. I just don't understand this kind of thinking. I really don't.
Well,
it blows me away.
It's always interesting to me when they say they didn't violate a rule, but you can't think to list everything, right? Like, I mean,
it's a common sense rule. If you're too sick to play, get your butt in bed and get some rest. What the heck?
Well, I guess he thought even if I'm in bed resting, it's not going to help me play tomorrow.
I guess.
And, you know, he wasn't in the hotel. I think this is just one of those things you have to understand perception. And even though it's not breaking a team rule, and this is difficult to me because I think that in the locker room that has been very tumultuous, I feel like Le'Veon Bell has led very well from there.
After the trade deadline,
he came out and he said, you know what, I want to be here, even though there were rumors, even playing with Luke Falk at the quarterback position and trying to do everything he can to win. So I believe he's done well. This is a mishap. This is a misstep. This is being unaware. This is being almost disrespectful to the point that you understand that your teammates are getting prepared to play a game that you cannot participate in. And in that, you should have enough respect for them, enough respect for your organization to think ahead. And listen, Coach, you know, it was either one of you two just now just said common sense. I can't remember which one it was.
It was me.
Yeah, Coach said common sense. The thing is, common sense ain't common.
No, apparently
right?
not.
Right? It's not something that everyone has. And everyone doesn't think deeply enough into every situation to realize what the consequence of this could be. And I think Le'Veon Bell didn't do that in this situation.
Mm. I don't have much more to add.
I mean, I have a problem with it. If I'm a player, I have a problem with it. If I'm a fan, I have a big problem with it. I'm a coach, I have a problem. I just, on every level, I just don't understand. Now, it's not that big of a deal. He wasn't going to play anyway.
Right.
However, what message are you sending? It's just.
Right. So what do you say to him?
There's just no self-awareness, right? Like, there's no just kind of like, hey, this
look.
And by the way, this is going to create a problem for my coach, and my teammates are going to have to answer questions about it and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just not thinking.
I think the thing from the player side is as if, like, if you're a player, you understand that something, like, to me, the flu, like, I have to be really sick.
Right.
Right. You know, I have to be extremely ill to allow you to rule me out. And even then, on Saturday night, I'm going to get pumped full of fluids. I'm going to do everything I can to try to come in the next morning and convince you that I know you ruled me out, but I think I can go.
If I'm good to bowl, I'm going to play.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean,
That's the problem.
Understanding to, for me that it would still be a bad look. It is a tiny bit different if it's a broken bone or, you know, or a real injury where, you know, he's got it. I don't know. But the flu, you could conceivably get better by rest and.
Right. And they're playing Thursday.
So there is some
concern over timetable. You don't have a whole week to get better. I don't know. It's just
a bad look. So we'll see. Again, just
I mean, it's a bad look. But what did he bowl, though?
Yeah, is he a good bowler?
What was he? How good was he?
Did he help his team win?
Was he close to 300? Maybe he's a really good bowler. We need more reporting.
That's what we got to do. Weren't
you telling me I don't orange yellow leather pants? So
one of the reports said he was
my point being,
pants.
He wasn't so trying to blend
yeah,
in.
Yeah, he wasn't exactly.
Like, you can see that, but I don't know. Maybe. So last night's comeback moves the Eagles back into a tie for the NFC East with the Dallas Cowboys. Those teams meet in Philly in week 16 with the winner likely earning the right to host either the 49ers or the Seahawks in the wild card round. We will start with a little panic or patience with the Eagles winning the NFC East. Who wants to take it? Don't all jump at once.
I would say, I say panic. I mean, like, I thought they looked horrendous last night, and they needed overtime to beat one of the absolute worst teams, if not the worst team in the league, who refused to cover their best pass catcher, even though all their receivers were injured. I mean, it's bold strategy by the Giants defense. And I just don't know what happens now. Alshon Jeffrey's not going to play. Lane Johnson might not play. Like, they are really, really depleted. They come out of that game having won it, yes, but A, whether they won it or not, it was going to come down to the Week 16 game in Dallas. And I just don't see how, when that game rolls around, that they have as much as Dallas has in terms of, you know, personnel with which to win it. I know Dallas has been underachieving and they can lose any game at any time. But A, so can the Eagles, as they've shown us. And B, I just feel like they're healthier and they're in better shape and they're just better equipped to handle these last three games.
Yeah, you're absolutely panicked when you look at this team, and you're panicked like you would be in any situation where you're having to rush people to the emergency room constantly, because that's what this team is doing. You come into the game with three healthy wide receivers. You lose Alshon Jeffrey. Obviously, DeSean Jackson has been lost for the year. And also your best offensive lineman, Lane Johnson, goes down. Now, you're excited because Carson Wentz found a way to leave this team and at least keep you alive. But when you look at playing against the Dallas Cowboys, a team who also stinks right now, they at least have their guys. You have Ezekiel Elliott. You have Gallup. You also have Amari Cooper. So you have the players that you came into the season that you could at least count on being there, showing up, and having been in those situations, to whereas the Philadelphia Eagles are depleted. They're in a situation that even when they had their guys, they were like Nelson Aguilar. They were dropping babies, dropping balls.
I can't think of that every time. All kinds of things going on.
It's like, and so
in my brain.
And so, you know, they asked Doug Peterson, did they save their season? Maybe they did for a night, but do you even want to save this and continue playing at the rate that you're losing guys?
Well, you got it. I mean, they're a mass unit. I mean, they're so depleted through injury that they're in a tough spot. But their schedule's easier, okay? You know, the Rams are coming in to play the Cowboys. And that's going to be a tough ball game.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just, to me, when you look at it, all right, they're depleted, they're beat up, but their schedule's a lot easier. Yep. So
But the schedule doesn't matter if you lose to the Dolphins and you barely beat the Giants. Like, those are easy parts of the schedule, and they went barely 1-1.
Here's what's happening. You know how it is, Coach. When you get the schedule, you look at it and you say, okay, I'm going to circle that game because I can beat that team. I'm going to circle this game because I can beat that team.
Right.
And what happens is when you're playing the Redskins and you're circling the Redskins, but Dwayne Haskins is also in the quarterback room going, oh, my goodness, we got the Eagles.
They're circling you.
When that happens, when everybody's circling everybody, that's not a good thing, Coach.
I understand. Listen, I'm trying to find a positive for him, man.
Doug Peterson said today that last night's win was the best win of Carson Wentz's career.
I agree with that, though.
Tell me why.
I'm not sure I fully
understand that.
So you look at the last two playoff runs the Philadelphia Eagles have made. They've both been with Nick Foles.
Oh, fair enough.
Then even starting out last season when this team wasn't playing well, there was a lot about the intangibles of Carson Wentz because everyone believed in his play. They believed in his talent. You have a depleted lineup last night. Zach Ertz is the one reliable receiver you have. You're playing with Boston Scott, who's a guy off the practice squad earlier this season, and you gut it out. That game wasn't necessarily really about his talent. It was about his will. It was about Carson Wentz refusing to let his team lose. And we haven't seen that from him. And I know we're going to look at it, and it is the New York Giants. And I gave a whole spiel on why they stink and why Carson Wentz would do well yesterday. But it was...
I was here for that.
You were here, but it was good to see him dig deep and find a way to lead a team and be the guy out in front of a team that probably shouldn't have won a game.
Quickly, before we go, and let's switch gears, will we see Eli Manning next week again?
It's going to depend on how Daniel Jones practices this week, if he can practice this week.
So if he's ready, he comes right back.
Yes. If he's healthy enough to play, they will play Daniel Jones. They've made that clear. But Pat Shurmur said today they have yet to really get Daniel Jones out there and see how that ankle is holding up this week. My sense is that it will be at least another week with Eli, but they're leaving open the possibility that Jones could come back.
It was fun to see him play well early.
It was.
I thought it was. On Sunday, a Bengals team employee saw a Patriots videographer filming Cincinnati's sideline. The Patriots released a statement last night saying the crew turned over all footage to the league and they accept full responsibility. Yesterday, Bill Belichick addressed the incident on his conference call.
Well, evidently, this is our production people on the TV show that were there. We have absolutely nothing to do with anything that they produce, direct, or shoot or anything. I've never even seen any of their tapes or anything else. So this is something that we 100% have zero involvement with. I don't have anything to do with TV productions or anything else. I have enough other stuff to do. And so what did or didn't happen, what they were involved or weren't involved with, and so forth, I have no idea.
That was prior to a team statement, which was issued last night, which says, we understand and acknowledge that our video crew, which included independent contractors who shot the video, unknowingly violated a league policy by filming the field and sideline from the press box. When questioned, the crew immediately turned over all footage to the league and cooperated fully. The production crew is independent of our football operation. We accept full responsibility for the actions of our production crew at the Browns-Bengals game. Then in a conference call this morning with Cincinnati media, Belichick answered further questions.
How differently do y'all operate, you know, after everything that happened in 08 when the NFL fined y'all and took a draft pick? How differently do y'all function now than maybe you did before all that happened?
I mean, we always try to do everything the right way. You know, look, we're competitive and we'll, you know, try to be competitive in every area, but, you know, we don't knowingly, intentionally want to do anything that's across the line. But since that's happened, I'd say we've tried to keep a good distance behind the line and not maybe take it as far as we would might have in the past, but I mean, it's never really fundamentally changed there.
In a conference call an hour later with local reporters, Belichick was further asked if he's spoken with anything on the content team in regards to the incident.
I don't know. Again, I have no involvement in this and no knowledge of it. And so I really don't have any idea what exactly is going on. I can tell you that, you know, we've never, as a coaching staff, and I personally have never viewed any video footage at all of anything that those production people have done, you know, other than what's shown on public television or something like that. But we don't have anything to do with what they do. So I really don't have much knowledge of the situation at all.
Well, let's start with this. The bottom line is it should be relatively easy to figure out. The league has the video, and so it either is or isn't problematic. Where does the league take this from here?
Well, it depends what's on the video. And honestly, and I haven't seen the video. I don't know what's on it. But if there's... So the idea is they were doing a feature on their advanced scout, right? So the advanced scout, right? So the advanced scout sits in the press box or in a booth and watches the game and probably has binoculars and a stopwatch and all this stuff that he needs. So it's possible, you know, if the video crew is behind him and you see a background shot of the field that has the Bengals sideline on it, maybe that's fine. If the video is locked in on the Bengals sideline and looking for signals and how they communicate and what they do in terms of changing their personnel and it lasts a long time, then the league would be able to say, well, this is suspicious. Let's delve further into this and find out the extent to which people on the football side might be involved. So those are all the hypotheticals. It'll depend on what's on the video. Does it show anything that you wouldn't be able to see by watching the game on television? You know, so if those kinds of things come up, then I think the league pokes around some more. If they look at it and they say, well, this is innocuous, like it couldn't, no one could possibly divine anything from that, then maybe there's a cursory fine of some sort because, again, the Patriots admit to inadvertently breaking a rule. And even if you inadvertently break a rule, you still broke one, and there probably has to be some sort of minor consequence at the very least.
Would this even be useful? What would be useful about this if there was something nefarious going on?
Well, it's illegal for a reason, right? Because there is some value. So how much? I mean, one thing, I don't know that there's another team that does more detailed work on the opponent than the Belichick and the Patriots. I mean, they're very, very detailed. And to me, that's the one thing that's alarming for me because they don't ever beat themselves. They don't do things that they're not aware of. Like I would be shocked that, you know, organizationally they're not aware of what's going on. And to me, it remains a violation. It's illegal for a reason. And I would suspect the tape will tell whether there's any, you know, real activity of wrongdoing or not.
I mean, listen, these guys aren't going to get the benefit of the doubt, right?
So if
the tape is close to the line of, okay, maybe they could have gotten something out of this, I believe they will be punished. And I also believe the perception will be that they were intentionally cheating in this situation. But I'm going to be honest, man. Like, I actually believe Bill Belichick. This is a guy that he doesn't talk a lot.
No, he does. Right? I agree with you.
Right. He doesn't share in this manner. We've had Deflategate and we had the taping from years back and we would wait for Bill Belichick to tell us something or give us something to make us say, dude didn't do this. This time, dude ain't do it. And when Coach said as an organization, he believes that they prepare the best, that they, you know, they dot every I, cross every T, they do. That's another reason why I don't believe. As an organization, they failed. Because as an organization, you have to understand.
There was a mistake,
right? Right.
There,
you have to,
there's no doubt.
You have
about
to understand
that.
The rules. You have to understand also who is a part of your organization and what has your organization has been accused of in the past.
But I think he knows that, which is why he said we stay further back from the line than we once did.
Absolutely. So I'm saying as an organization, they failed, not Bill Belichick. And so they should be punished and it should be handled according to the rules.
Let's
I don't think that they're cheating.
Let's make sure this punishment is, if there is some, that it fits it. OK, because the Deflategate and what they did to Tom Brady to me was way out of bounds. All right, I'm talking about from the league standpoint because everybody was messing with those balls.
Too much.
All the quarterbacks
were.
You didn't like
it.
I'm telling you, all quarterbacks messed with the ball.
Okay. I just want to go back.
Opened up a can of worms, huh? That's a whole other story.
Yeah, we do a whole show on this.
I think it's important for people to understand. When Ryan said, you know, if it shows that it might have been over the line, then you believe they will be punished. I think it's important for people to understand. If the video reveals that something might have happened that is over the line or close to the line, what would happen is it would trigger further investigation, mm-hmm. right? They would now start making calls and maybe asking for emails and text exchanges to see if you could, was there any communication here that indicated that? But again, big if, big hypothetical, entirely possible that this comes to nothing or something close to nothing. But to your initial point, the problem is one of the consequences of the Spygate situation in 2007, 2008 was the Patriots gave away the benefit of the doubt for future incidents. Sure.
I think that's where we started. This is a different situation if it's not the Patriots given the history.
And I think Belichick knows that.
I've never heard that tone. I think he absolutely knows that.
It sounds like he knows that.
And having covered that team a long time, I just hear a different tone. To me, it's contrite and like, oh, come on. I believe him. But
you're a believer.
Well, I am. In this case, I am. The Heisman Trophy finalists were announced last night. LSU quarterback Joe Burrow, the overwhelming favorite, after setting every SEC passing record under the sun. Justin Fields threw for 40 touchdowns and one interception, leading Ohio State to a 13-0 record, not to mention a Big Ten championship. Fellow Buckeye Chase Young, the only defender making the trip to New York, thanks to 16.5 sacks in just 10 games. And Oklahoma quarterback Jalen Hurts rounds out the list after accounting for 51 touchdowns, tied with Burrow for the most in the nation. For more, we bring in who else? Our own Mel Kiper Jr. And Mel, we're getting there, so let's start with this. We'll start with, among them, the Heisman finalists, Joe Burrow, the clear top quarterback in this class. Tell me about Joe Burrow.
Pretty amazing, Wendy, when you think back to August and where he was as a third, fourth rounder. And you say, well, why was he rated so low? Well, he was at 57% and change, only 16 touchdown passes last year. He improves from 57 and change to 78% completion percentage, from 16 touchdowns up to 48. He had three or more touchdown passes in 11 of 13 games, Wendy. He was near 80% in six games. And very few passes touch the ground, hit the ground, and that's something in practice people talk about. Very few of his passes hit the ground. Well, how about in games against very good competition? Joe Burrow was on fire from the start to the finish, never had a bad game. Like I said, against solid competition, that's why he's number one overall in terms of the mock draft projections right now.
All right, Mel, don't forget, you can see the Heisman right here on ESPN Saturday night. But let me ask you this, who's the number one prospect now?
Chase Young is going to be number one on boards and ratings boards, and it's a defensive end from Ohio State who uses his hands so well coached coming out of the Ohio State system where you have Joey Bosa, Nick Bosa, and how NFL-ready they were immediately. He will be expected to be Jadeveon Clowney. He will be expected to be Myles Garrett, and he has the capability and the skill set to do exactly that, be that feared pass rusher, that game wrecker, and that's why on boards, Wendy, number one, but probably number two in the draft, maybe the New York Giants. Needing that player like Chase Young coming off the edge would be the pick in terms of a mock with Joe Burrow going number one. But I think in terms of the best player in this draft, and his sack numbers are right there with Myles Garrett. There was a half off, and he was ahead sack-wise of Clowney coming out after 3 years.
Mel, what are the chances Tua Tagovailoa drops out of the first round? And I say that because of the injuries, of course.
Yeah, there's no way I can see that unless something medically happens between now and then or some report comes out about Tua. But if everything's okay medically, yes, the lower extremity injuries are a concern. That's why he's not going number one, probably. Joe Burrow is. But if you're Miami and you're at four, or you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers or the LA Chargers in that 10 to 15 range, you got to look at Tua. And you're only getting him at that point because of the durability concern. Even Miami, say, at that 4-5 range, Wendy, would only be because of that. So you benefit because of the injury, which allows him to drop to you when back a couple months ago you thought that was not possible.
Mel, we saw five quarterbacks go in the first round last year. What are the odds we see it again in 2019?
Slim, very slim. I don't see Jake Fromm, Georgia, as a first-round quarterback. Jacob Eason, Georgia to Washington. Had a good year, not a great year. He's got big-time size, great arm, but he needs another year to become more precise, accurate, and be more consistent in terms of decision-making. And you think about the three that are guaranteed, the locks, obviously, Joe Burrow going number one, Tua somewhere in that early to mid-first round, and then Justin Herbert from Oregon, who's been a little hot and cold of late the last three games. Needs a strong bowl game against Wisconsin, but he should go top 5 to 10. So three guaranteed, Wendy. I don't know where the fourth comes. Maybe Eason if he comes out, maybe in that 20 to 32 range, but not five.
All right, Mel, one more. How high could we see Jerry Jeudy go in this draft?
Arizona Cardinals, New York Jets would be two great landing spots for Jerry Jeudy. He's the best receiver in this draft. Slightly ahead of CeeDee Lamb from Oklahoma, Laviska Shenault Jr., Colorado, Henry Ruggs III, Alabama. This is a great wide receiver class, Wendy. Make no mistake about that. Jeudy is a Marvin Harrison type in terms of route running and the kind of player he can project to in the NFL. As I said, the Arizona Cardinals, the New York Jets, somewhere in that top 5 to 10, maybe even as high as 3 or 4, Wendy, after all said and done. He's one of the elite players in this draft.
All right, Mel. They say it's a holiday season, but around here we call it mock draft season. You know, Todd's releasing, what, 1.0 next Monday night?
Oh, yeah.
And you, can't my wait. Friend? Mel, you? When can we hear from you?
When the juniors declare some in mid-January. I waited out the impatient youngster McShay. Jumps the gun on us all.
Okay, you know? I you know, those millennials, yeah, except he's not.
I know.
All right.
Yeah,
thank you, Mel.
What you got to put up with. Thanks, Wendy.
So the race to the bottom is on between the one-win Bengals and the two-win Giants. Cincinnati has the edge for the top overall pick with the FBI giving the Bengals a 70% chance of earning that pick. Both teams still play the Dolphins. That could determine which franchise gets the first shot at Joe Burrow or Chase Young. ESPN NFL Nation Jets reporter Rich Cimini tweeting out a number of injury updates. Here's the latest on Jamal Adams. He will be a game-time decision on Thursday, but unlikely to play. He's not participating in today's walkthrough. If he feels better on game day and tests it out, it's an ankle, and feels good, I'll let him play. That's according to head coach Adam Gase. Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson limited in yesterday's practice with a quad injury. He leads the league
28 touchdown passes. He's 22 yards away from Michael Vick's single-season quarterback rushing record. He's yet to be sidelined since he took over as Baltimore's starting quarterback. That means he's started 20 straight games. We say hello now to our Ravens reporter, Jameson Hensley. Jameson, how serious is this quad injury for Lamar Jackson?
Well, Wendy, I asked John Harbaugh about Lamar Jackson's quad injury yesterday, and he said it is not a serious injury. But given the quick turnaround, the Ravens have to play the Jets on Thursday night, Harbaugh described Jackson as day-to-day. Harbaugh did decline to say whether Jackson would be limited in tonight's practice, which is essentially a walkthrough. They're not having a full-blown practice. Now, I was at last night's practice, and during the media viewing period, Robert Griffin III, the Ravens' backup, he participated in all of the reps. Now, after about 30 minutes in practice, the media viewing portion was over. Reporters were leaving the indoor field house when Lamar Jackson was entering, and he did walk with a slight limp. Now, Jackson was expected to talk to reporters today and give us an update on that injury.
Jameson, thank you. A number of other injury updates. Jameis Winston has been cleared to play despite a broken right thumb, although the Bucs aren't sure exactly when he did it in Sunday's win over the Colts. He had trouble gripping the ball after halftime. He missed one offensive series before he returned. Tampa Bay travels to Detroit on Sunday. Bucs wide receiver Mike Evans expected to miss the rest of the season with a hamstring injury, according to our own Jeremy Fowler. He broke free for a 61-yard touchdown pass from Winston late in the first quarter of Sunday's win, but came up limp at the end. He did not return. And Washington Redskins running back Darius Geis has been diagnosed with an MCL sprain in his left knee. Geis suffered the injury during Sunday's loss to the Green Bay Packers after a hit to the knee in the second quarter. Geis is not expected to play this week. Sure is. The Eagles staged a 14-point comeback last night with Zach Ertz catching the game-winning touchdown in overtime. The tight end led the Eagles with 9 catches for 91 yards and 2 TDs, carrying the passing game after injuries left Philly with just 2 healthy wide receivers. The Raiders will say goodbye to Oakland on Sunday, hosting the Jags in their final home game before they make the big move to Las Vegas next season. The Raiders have played in Oakland for a total of 47 seasons, including the last 25, since returning from Los Angeles in 1995. Who were there having coached this team from 2015 to 2017. So when you watch all that, what do you remember?
I remember growing up watching those teams. Now, I didn't get to go to any of the playoff games. My dad would bring me to some of the lesser games.
Those were we'll the grown-ups, right.
So I got to watch them growing up as a kid. We actually played our high school football game, Hayward High, defeated Miramani on that field. All right. Then I had the honor of coaching that team for 3 years. And the one game on Thursday night, we came back and beat Andy Reid, beat the Chiefs late. That was a big win. And then the other one was I went in there as an opponent. That was a great.
You don't mind us playing this.
I went in there. I'm going to tell you this. I went in there as an opponent in 2000 and the AFC Championship game, and we knocked out Rich Gannon. And we
you
went
have
on
some pretty good memories.
Part of the Ravens.
There.
So we went on. Yeah. So anyway, I have a lot of memories there. It's a special place to me. And
do you hate to see him go? You are sad. You hate to see him go.
I'm sad for the city of Oakland. Yeah. But I know the team has to do what it's doing. It's going to be down in Vegas. It'll be a good situation for them in their future.
And you weren't there as a home team, but as an opponent.
I've never won there.
How many times did you play?
3 times.
Oh, 3 times.
They beat us 1 year, and they only had 98 total yards of offense. Like, we were a really good team sometimes going in there. We just couldn't win. It's a tough place to play.
A lot of turnover.
Amazing fans. So historic. And so it's sad to see them go, but there will be a ton of memories for everybody who got to be a part of that organization.
Yeah, bittersweet, no doubt. One more game to go. It's Hat Tuesday. And before we start, hats off to our pit crew here, who just made these helmets happen. You didn't see it, but they are sprinting.
It's part of the magic.
I know, right? They deserve hats off to you.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ryan's doing his weekly dance. Coach, you go first.
What's going on?
All in.
I'm all in on my New Orleans Saints.
Oh.
Okay. You got the music. It's perfect theme.
Yeah.
It's perfect theme. New Orleans, get it done now, all right? So, look, tough game last week against San Francisco. You'll bounce back this week on Monday night. Make it happen.
A little pep talk, courtesy of Hat Tuesday.
It's on next. Let me slide around here.
Oh, I don't know. I know Dan's going.
Yeah. Dan, you go.
The Buffalo Bills haven't beat a team with a winning record except for Tennessee earlier in the year. I think they're going to beat this
Steelers on Sunday night. I just realized you might be upset about
that. Hold on,
so I'm all in on the Bills this week. That's their signature win.
I'm all in on this game.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I agree or disagree, but I like what both teams are doing. And in this case, they're what could be a four-string quarterback.
Yep.
And the job Mike Tomlin's doing. I just like this game.
They both play great defense.
It was great.
You like great defense.
I do like great defense.
Appreciate
that. Defense wins championships.
That's what I was going to go.
Ryan Tannehill, you are flat out balling. You have made me a believer. I am all in with you and the Tennessee Titans. Let's see what you do this week against the Houston Texans.
All right, everybody. What's tomorrow? Wednesday. I guess that makes tomorrow Wednesday. We'll see you then.
Hope